Hello, everybody. First, I'd like to say thank you for that warm introduction. It was so much more than I deserve. I'm lucky to be able to speak here today, and it's a big pleasure for me to be able to do it and to be able to share the company with so many great people that I respect and have learned to love over the years as friends and most importantly, respect as colleagues. And so jumping into the presentation, for the defense, like Melissa noted, that's normally where appeals get generated. The good news is that these rules are construed very liberally in our favor to give us and our defendants as much of an opportunity to raise issues that they've preserved to be worked out through the legal process. And so you can really put a lot of thought into the front end if you're someone who is both trial counsel and appellate counsel when you're planning your case about all the different kind of novel issues that you would like to preserve. If you could hit the next one, Melissa. And so generally speaking, though, the defense does not have the right to raise issues of appeal until there is a final judgment and sentence. It is very, very rare that a defendant will have the right to what we call an interlocutory order or appeal. And that's simply put, whenever you pause kind of before the case is complete in the trial court and take an issue up to the appellate court to get resolved before you come back down and continue your litigation in the trial court. There are some examples of when a defendant though can do an interlocutory appeal. And so I put that in here because I know that a lot of us, especially on the defense, do both trial work and appellate work. And so I wanted to kind of take a moment to talk about appellate strategies that you can incorporate even before the cases come to the conclusion in the sense that there's been a judgment and sentence in the trial court. And so some of those opportunities for interlocutory appeal, which are extremely limited because they have to be something that is articulated by statute and by, you know, it's been granted the defendant by law. Some of these have to do with the accused challenging the state's power to restrain him at all. And so that means basically to have him in custody or arrested and on bond. Some of the others that you can raise would be, and that would include things like, you know, a double jeopardy or a statute of limitations issue or something along those lines. Could also include a challenge to the constitutionality of a statute. And so those things are important for those of us that do trial work as well, because this is an opportunity that if you can advocate for your client and get the result that is just under the law as quickly and as efficiently as possible, these are excellent tools to have at your disposal. But probably the most often used one is the denial of bail or excessive bail. This is an issue that you can raise during the course of the pretrial litigation to basically, what I would recommend is doing some sort of motion to challenge the bail or challenge the bail conditions. Once you get a ruling on that, you'll want that to be, you know, on record because, of course, as we know in the appellate world, if it's not in the record, it didn't happen. So I definitely would recommend doing a written motion, having it on the record and getting your ruling from the court so that you could then appeal that motion. Another avenue would be to use a writ of habeas corpus to a pretrial writ of habeas corpus to get that written motion, you know, that vehicle that you need in order to have an order and a ruling that you can then take up. And so that's just something I wanted to work in there for my folks that do trial work too. And of course, when you're the appellate counsel on the back end, seeing those things in the record are kind of a pleasant thing to see because you know that you have issues that you can research and raise and things that have been preserved. I guess back to Melissa.
So getting back to the state's appeal, one thing to keep in mind is that if you're going to file a state's appeal, you only have 20 days to submit the notice of appeal. So the typical appellate timeframe, of course, for defendants is 30 days if there's no motion for new trial filed, or 90 days if there is a motion for new trial, which is something that Amy will talk about in a little bit. But 20 days is kind of an unusual number. You don't see that much in the rules of appellate procedure. And it is something to keep in mind because it happens very fast. When you're talking about any sort of appellate time table, you have to keep in mind rule of appellate procedure 4.1, which is the computing time rule. And that rule establishes that the date that the actual appealable order or event happens is not counted for purposes of the timetable, but the last day of that period is counted. So be familiar with that and really, you know, get out a calendar, and I physically count out the days, because you don't want to make a mistake with getting the notice of appeal timely filed, because that can, of course, botch everything. Another interesting fact that you should keep in mind is that the actual elected district or county attorney in your jurisdiction has to physically sign the notice of appeal. It cannot be an assistant prosecuting attorney. So we've had in Harris County situations, of course, our elected DA is extremely busy. She attends meetings and conferences and other things out of town. We've had to overnight a notice of appeal through the mail and get it overnighted back to try to get that done in time. So again, when you're looking at a case, or if it looks like a situation is headed toward where you may need to pursue a state's appeal, really keep that in mind so that you can be on the same page with the trial folks, with your elected DA, so that you can get his or her signature physically on the notice of appeal. Amy talked about interlocutory appeals, and there are specific issues there, you know, that you can take in between trial proceedings. There are certain types of state's appeals, anything brought under 4401A or 4401B, where the state is entitled to a stay of proceedings pending the outcome of that appeal. So this is important to know, because your trial court may not be aware of that rule and may still, let's say they grant a motion to suppress and the state wants to take that up on appeal. Well, you need to know that the trial court can't force the trial to continue without letting that appeal be resolved. So if the trial court isn't aware of the state's right to a stay of proceedings for anything under 4401A or B, then be sure to move for a stay in the trial court to get that straightened out so that you can pursue the appeal properly and timely. Another thing to keep in mind is that when the state is the appellant, the state is responsible for coordinating with the court reporter to arrange for the transcript to be drawn up. So again, with that tight 20-day time frame, you probably won't have access to the full court reporter's record before you file the notice of appeal. But you do need to make arrangements for it, and you do need to try to get that record as fast as you can so that you can properly evaluate the case and decide whether you want to pursue an appeal or not. There are designations of items to be included in the clerk's record that should be filed. The rules of appellate procedure require certain things to be included in the clerk's record, and there's a whole list of things that have to be in there whether you ask for it or not. But there may be special things that you want to be included in the clerk's record. And so keep an eye out for those types of things in your trial records, or your trial files rather. And if you want something extra that's not included in the rules to be added to the clerk's record for appeal, then you need to make sure you let the clerk know that. Otherwise, you have to pursue supplementation later on. And that can be not only time consuming, but onerous to do as well. So try to get all of those ducks in a row from the outset, so that you have a nice, clean record going forward for both you, the defense, who has to respond, of course, the state's appeal, and the appellate court, rather.